Happening now, President Biden and health officials are rethinking mask guidance for vaccinated Americans as the Delta variant rages in largely unvaccinated hotspots. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's deadly serious about getting to the truth of January 6th, despite a Republican boycott of the investigation and a new suggestion by former President Trump that the rioters were loving. And we're tracking dozens of dangerous wildfires, spreading smoke and haze all the way to the East Coast. Will a turn in the weather make things better or worse? Welcome to our viewers in the United States and around the world. Wolf Blitzer is off today. I'm Jim Acosta, and you're in the Situation Room. We begin our coverage this hour with CNN Chief National Affairs Correspondent Jeff Zeleny over at the White House. Jeff, the Biden administration is trying to get its arms around this growing COVID crisis, which is hammering unvaccinated Americans. What additional measures are they considering at this hour?
Well, Jim, President Biden, just a few moments ago, taking questions from reporters in the Roosevelt Room here at the White House, was asked that question exactly. And he said, we are still following the science on this, not answering directly if there is going to be some new guidance on masking. Of course, that is really the underlying question here. We do know from our reporting that White House officials and top health officials are discussing, you know, the possibility of revising those mask guidelines for the vaccinated. But Jim, I can tell you the biggest focus here of the pandemic is among the unvaccinated. They're sending more money to rural health centers. They are focusing more money on testing as well. That now, there's more than one pandemic, of course, but now it's being focused on those who've not yet gotten the vaccine.
Tonight, with the Delta variant fueling a resurgence of COVID cases among the unvaccinated, the White House and health officials are debating whether to ask those who have already received a vaccine to mask up once again.
We've never said that battle is over. It's still ongoing.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said no decisions have been made by the CDC or the administration to recommend that people who have been vaccinated take new steps to protect themselves from a rising number of breakthrough cases.
It would be more concerning, or should be more concerning, to all of you and the American people if we were not having those conversations. So there are certainly conversations about steps we can and should take.
CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said the U.S. is at another pivotal point in the pandemic, with the Delta variant making up more than 80% of new cases in America.
Whether you are vaccinated or not, please know we together are not out of the woods yet.
To be sure, it's affecting Americans in vastly different ways. Florida, Missouri, and Texas account for about 40% of the spiking cases, as the highly infectious variant rages across areas of the country with low vaccination rates, where people are at greater risk for hospitalization and death.
We have a pandemic for those who haven't gotten a vaccination. It's that basic, that simple.
But with just under 50% of the country vaccinated and vaccine hesitancy showing few signs of easing, the White House is redoubling its efforts to persuade people to get a COVID shot, placing a specific emphasis on rural America.
We are announcing that we are sending $100 million to rural health clinics to support vaccine education and outreach efforts in these communities where we are generally seeing low vaccine uptake.
With the Delta variant showing no signs of slowing, the White House is at a crossroads, trying to spark new interest in vaccinations without alarming those who've been vaccinated for months.
What I say to people who are worried about a new pandemic is get vaccinated.
While CDC guidance has not changed, Dr. Walensky made clear masking was a personal choice for those who have been vaccinated.
You should certainly be wearing a mask if you are unvaccinated. You have the opportunity to make the personal choice to add extra layers of protection if you so choose.
At the CNN town hall last night in Cincinnati, the president suggested the CDC would soon have new recommendations for school children.
The CDC is going to say that what we should do is everyone under the age of 12 should probably be wearing a mask in school.
Several doctors across the country are sounding the alarm about their fears of the next chapter in the pandemic. Alabama doctor Brittany Cobia sharing her personal experience with patients, writing, "One of the last things they do before they're intubated is beg me for the vaccine. I hold their hand and tell them that I'm sorry, but it's too late."
President Biden, again, just a few moments ago, making clear that this is not a one-size-fits-all problem across the country. In lower vaccination areas, yes, there is a rising uptick in the Delta variant cases, but he's using this as an argument to get vaccinated again. This is something that really the White House has been trying to impress upon people. We saw it in the town hall last evening. We're hearing it from the White House again today. The question is if any changes to the guidance will happen. President Biden leaving the door open to that. He said a group of some 25 or so federal officials are looking into all of this masking guidance. But that, of course, would apply to those who are vaccinated. Important to separate that. The president now is saying it's a pandemic for the unvaccinated. That's why they're trying to use this rise in a Delta variant to get people the vaccine. We'll see if all this argument again works, Jim. It certainly hasn't up until this point.
That's Jim. Right. Get the shot. Save yourself a trip to the hospital. Jeff Zeleny.
Right.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it. Let's get an update from a major coronavirus hotspot. CNN's Layla Santiago is joining us from Miami. Layla, Florida is leading the nation in new COVID cases, and it's scary. It's getting scary down there.
Right. For the second week in a row, White House officials said that one in five cases you will find right here in the state of Florida. So, yes, they are leading the nation when it comes to the number of new cases. And then when you look at hospitalizations, Jim, you will see that they are approaching levels we saw sort of at the height of the pandemic. You know, this morning we actually went to a testing site where we saw a line of folks going in. We talked to the people who run that site as well, a few others here in Miami-Dade, and they tell us that they had seen a lull in testing, and just in the last few weeks they've seen the demand for testing go up. They attribute that to the rise in cases as well as travel. Now, here at the Jackson Health System where we are, they would tell me that 90% of the COVID-19 patients that they are seeing are unvaccinated. Go into the ICU, that's 95% of those. So to put things in perspective, I have spoken this week, Jim, to a COVID-19 unvaccinated patient in the hospital bed. I've spoken to nurses, I've spoken to doctors, and every single one of them are telling me the same thing. There is a level of frustration because of the numbers going up, because of the sick patients that they have, given that there is enough PPE, there are vaccines, and they're just urging people to get vaccinated.
All right, Layla Santiago, it's as simple as that. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. And for more on the surging COVID pandemic, I'm joined by the former Obama White House health policy advisor, Dr. Zeke Emanuel. Dr. Emanuel, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. It's becoming increasingly clear this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And I want to show you something. Let's take a look at these two maps. The areas, first of all, let's show you this first map. The areas of darkest green that you're seeing right now across the Northeast and parts of the Midwest of the country have the highest vaccination rates. Now, let's show the second map. This shows you the light yellow sections show where cases are not going up as much. Once again, in the Northeast, in parts of the Midwest, there is a correlation. There is a connection. Dr. Emanuel, as we are going to, as we're going through these maps and looking at the data, are we going to continue to see cases concentrated in areas where people aren't getting the vaccine, do you think?
We are going to see many more cases in areas where people haven't gotten the vaccine. But that's not to say that places where you have 60 or 70% of the population or even higher vaccinated, you won't see some upswing. We do know that people who have been vaccinated can get Delta. What we probably won't see is in those areas increase in hospitalization, increase in mortality, because the vaccine, while it doesn't 100% prevent people from getting infected with COVID, does seem to prevent people from getting very sick or ending up in the hospital and, God forbid, dying. And so I do think we're going to see many, many more of these upcoming surges in those areas that you have indicated where there's been a lot of resistance to vaccination.
And that's the important point. And we can go back to that graphic, those two graphics, one more time and show people, again, those dark green areas in the Northeast and in the Midwest. Those are areas where people are fully vaccinated as a percentage of the population. A higher percentage of people are fully vaccinated. But when you show this other map, we can put that up on screen, the coronavirus cases, you're seeing a surge in areas where you have less vaccination, where you have lower vaccination rates. I get what you're saying, Dr. Emanuel, that yes, of course, in areas where people are vaccinated, where there are high vaccination rates, people are still going to occasionally catch COVID. But it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, the much more serious cases, the higher prevalence of those serious cases, that's going to be in the areas where you have lower vaccination rates, by and large.
Jim, you must have become a doctor in the interim from when we last spoke, because I think you've explained it extremely well. Let me also say that within any big city, whether it's New York or Chicago or Washington, D.C., there will be microenvironments where a community has not gotten well vaccinated, and that community is susceptible to this very contagious Delta variant. And so you could see within small areas of otherwise very well vaccinated area communities, some outbreaks because a large swath of people in those microenvironments have not gotten vaccinated. And that, again, that's a concern. It probably won't overwhelm the hospital systems because you have capacity, but it could dramatically increase the number of people who are sick in that community. And that's, again, a tragedy. We have the solution to this problem, as the president says. He's pleading with people. And it is surprising how many people find excuses not to get vaccinated. When you have something so effective, it's readily accessible. Go into a pharmacy. It's free. You don't have to pay for it. What more do we have to do?
And you hardly have to wait in line anymore. But the White House is now having to deal with this problem. And the White House is considering asking vaccinated Americans to put their masks back on, which is obviously going to annoy the heck out of everybody. Do you think it is time for the CDC to change these guidelines again? What do you think?
So, Jim, honestly, I have not really taken my mask off. I go outside and walk. I still have my mask. I certainly, when I go into the post office or the grocery store or the pharmacy or any other place,
but what about everybody else, Dr. Emanuel? Because, honestly, I think asking people when they go outside to put their mask on when they're fully vaccinated, that's asking too much. What I'm hearing from health experts is if you're in confined spaces like elevators, on airplanes, that sort of thing, you're going to be better protected with a mask.
So I went to a meeting indoors the other day, 2 days ago, and I wore my mask the whole time inside. I think that's absolutely, it's added protection. We spent the last 18 months fending off COVID. It's not taking too much to wear a mask. It's not that onerous. And I do think it adds a little bit extra of protection. Now, if you're vaccinated, even if you got the new Delta variant, you wouldn't be terribly sick, likely. But that's still, you still don't want to get sick, and you certainly don't want to spread it if you happen to get it.
And let me ask you this. The daily pace of becoming fully vaccinated against COVID-19 just hit its lowest point since January. What do you say to people who are vaccinated and look at the prospect of having to mask up indoors again and ask, why am I being punished for this? Because that is what people are saying right now, is why did I go through the trouble of getting vaccinated if I have to put this mask on? I'm asking this question knowing the answer, which is you're not going to get seriously ill, but enlighten us.
Well, I think that's half the answer. You're not going to get seriously ill, and that is one of the huge benefits of this vaccine and shows that it's effective. But the other is, it does remind us, Jim, that this is an infectious disease and we're all in it together, and that what your neighbors do affects you.
That's right.
And this isn't just individual responsibility. This is community responsibility. What I do affects my family. It affects the people around me. It affects my colleagues. It affects the country. And that's something, we have to recognize more. We're getting vaccinated for ourselves, but also for all the other people we interact with.
And if we can get everybody vaccinated, then we don't have to worry about those crazy masks that we all are sick of.
It will then be in the rearview mirror. And that's the main way, that's the fastest way to get over COVID, is for everyone who hasn't been vaccinated to get vaccinated. We have more than enough vaccine. That's not the issue.
All right. Dr. Zeke Emanuel, thanks so much for that. And coming up, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is on the hunt for additional Republicans to join the January 6th committee. We have new details on who she's considering. Stay with us. You're in The Situation. Speaker Nancy Pelosi is on the lookout for additional Republicans to join the January 6th committee. after House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy pulled every GOP member off of that panel. Our chief congressional correspondent, Manu Raju, is tracking all of the latest developments on Capitol Hill for us. How is the speaker's search going for these other Republicans? Do we have a sense if anybody is going to be joining Liz Cheney?
It seems very possible. She is considering adding Congressman Adam Kinzinger as part of the members who are investigating the January 6th insurrection. Of course, she did name Liz Cheney, as you mentioned, one of eight of her selections. Now that there are no Republican selections that came from Kevin McCarthy, there are those vacancies, and that adding Adam Kinzinger has support among the Democratic members of the committee, as well as Liz Cheney, who said that he would be a great addition. Now, also, she is thinking about allowing an outside advisor, Republican outside advisor, to come in as well. Former Congressman Denver Riggleman met with Democratic leadership staff earlier today in Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office to talk about potentially serving in some sort of role on the January 6th investigative committee. We'll see if that happens. Now, at the same time, Kevin McCarthy himself sidestepped questions when I asked him earlier today about whether or not why there was any concerns about having Republicans join Democrats as part of this investigation.
In your view, what is so wrong with having Liz Cheney and potentially Adam Kinzinger serve on the select committee? Potentially they could provide some level of ideological balance to this committee. What is wrong with having one or two members of your conference join with Democrats to investigate what happened here?
You know it, and we predicted it back at the very beginning. This is a sham committee that's just politically driven by Speaker Pelosi.
Now, at the same time, there's some questions now about whether Liz Cheney will face any blowback internally, lose a potential committee assignment for taking the spot from Nancy Pelosi. Currently, Liz Cheney serves on the House Armed Services Committee. But we are hearing from multiple sources that House Republican leaders are signaling that they are unlikely to take the action of punishing Liz Cheney further. Of course, Jim, as you know, she lost that number three spot in the leadership over a fight with Donald Trump. But further sanctions for joining with Nancy Pelosi over Kevin McCarthy as part of this investigative committee does not seem like she's going to face any further consequences. We'll see if that changes. But Republicans at the moment see taking that step will be a distraction as they try to take back Congress next year. Jim?
Yeah, Manu, those hearings haven't started yet, so maybe too soon to say one way or the other on that front. Manu Raju, thanks so much for that. Let's get reaction now, though, from Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley. He's a member of the House Intelligence Committee. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us. If the House Speaker decides to add Congressman Kinzinger or Republican staffers like Denver Riggleman to this committee, how much of a difference would that make with people who continue to deny what happened on January 6th? Would it really go that far in convincing these very Trump Republicans?
I think the message from the Speaker is she's bending over backwards to try to get something done to find out the truth. I think my Republican colleagues have chosen power over truth. And party over country. And first she offered them a nonpartisan independent commission, and they voted against that. Then she offered this, which was the only choice left. They're refusing to participate. There's not much left she can do other than find those Republicans who take this seriously, whether they're seated members or not.
And can Democrats really claim this is a bipartisan committee if the Republicans who end up serving are some of the most prominent anti-Trump members in Congress? Or do you really have a choice at this point?
There's nobody left in the room. 175 Republicans voted against an independent commission. There are deniers in the caucus that the riot even took place. They voted against the select committee. They voted against a lawful election. So, you know, it's not as if the Speaker has Monty Hall pointing to door number three. She's got two choices: do nothing at all, and the truth will never be found out, or find Republicans who are willing to seek the truth to help prevent it from happening in the future.
And what does it tell you that Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn, one of the very first witnesses who will testify before the Select Committee Tuesday, is already coming under attack from conservative media? I don't have to tell you the names of those personalities on certain outlets, but they are attacking Harry Dunn, accusing him of being a liberal activist and so on. What do you make of those charges?
You know, it's tough. You know, my group was one of the last groups that was escorted out of the room, you know, the room where it happened. And there were officers holding guns on those who are attacking us as that was taking place. I'm here and I'm safe because of those officers. We lost two officers. Over 100 were injured. We should be thanking Officer Dunn. And Officer Dunn, thank you. And I apologize for the entire country for the abuse you took and all the other officers who took this abuse. And the least we can do is find out what took place and pass a security supplemental, which will help keep you safe in the job that you do so well.
And on a different issue, COVID cases are surging, but nearly half of your Republican House colleagues still won't say publicly whether they've been vaccinated. What message does that send to their constituents? And have you asked any of your Republican colleagues, have you been vaccinated? And does this ever come up in conversation?
You know, it does occasionally, and I have no idea why they don't want to answer. I mean, there's at least two good reasons for members of
Congress. I guess, I mean, do they privately tell you, yeah, I'm vaccinated, but I don't want to say it
publicly? Some do, and some won't. But look, there's at least two reasons for a member of Congress to do it, to protect themselves, their family, and everyone they come in contact with, but also to set an example, right? Vaccinations have plateaued. You can save lives. This is no longer some political game. It is a very dangerous game you're playing, and you got to cut it out.
Absolutely. Cut it out. Go get the shot. Save lives. That's a great message. All right, Congressman Mike Quigley, thank you so much. And up next, President Trump downplays the Capitol riot, calls the crowd loving. You'll hear him in his own words, twisted words. Next. Tonight, we have a chilling new insight into former President Donald Trump's departure from reality. This comes from an audio recording Trump made this past March and released by Carol Lenick and Phil Rucker of The Washington Post. It was made for their newly published book, I Alone Can Fix It. Let's listen.
There was a lot of love. I've heard that from everybody. Many, many people have told me. That was a loving crowd. And you know, it was too bad. It was too bad that got you know, that they did.
There were just some
my statement.
But my Mr. President, I apologize. What we're trying to understand is not blame, not castigate.
No,
we want to understand, what did you want when you said go up there? What would you have dreamed?
I would have said that you will show not to go in, although they were ushered in by the police. I mean, in all fairness, the Capitol Police were ushering people in. The Capitol Police were very friendly. You know, they were hugging a kid. You don't see that. But there's plenty of tape on that, too, you know, because the Capitol Police were, that's the way it is. But I wanted, I mean, personally, what I wanted is what they wanted. They showed up just to show support, because I happen to believe the election was rigged at a level like nothing has ever been rigged before.
Let's bring in CNN's chief media correspondent, Brian Stelter. Brian, I cannot get over how delusional this sounds. I mean, the lies, I mean, it's just nuts. But does it sound like the former president is emboldened to spin even more outrageous lies about January 6th, the more time passes since that deadly attack? I mean, we see this video day after day. It just sounds delusional to listen to what he's saying.
But emboldened is the word. I think that is why this is relevant. We are seeing him over time dig in further and further and further. And lies on this level are like a power trip. They are a challenge to the audience. Lies on this level, delusions on this level, you know, you're daring people not to believe their own eyes and ears, not to
right.
believe this videotape. You're daring people to deny what they actually know to be true. And when you do that, when you challenge someone, when they go along with it, when they buy into your lies, you have power over them. It is a propaganda technique that we are seeing Trump employ in this situation. And the more time goes on, the less of these videos are seen on Fox, the fewer these videos are seen on Newsmax. The memories do fade in right-wing media. They exist certainly in the rest of the country, but the memories are fading within the MAGA base. And so he's able, I think, to exert more power by becoming more emboldened with the lies, Jim.
Yeah, he's inviting his supporters to go and live in this cult-like alternate reality that he inhabits. And I just want to ask you this. How much more dangerous could he be if he still had his old platforms of Facebook and Twitter? I can't imagine allowing him on any of these platforms. He would be lying right now as we speak about what happened on January 6th.
Because that would give him a much more direct path to the public. Instead, what he does is he occasionally calls in to his favorite shows, and he's given interviews to lots of these authors, in part to get his voice out there. And I think when we're airing this audio, we're certainly wrapping it in context, showing people the real video so they know that what he's saying is baloney, or actually much worse than baloney. It's like this poisoned food that you should not eat. But I think what he's doing is he's trying to find alternate ways to reach people because he doesn't have those platforms. And we know he's given interviews for more than a dozen of these books. So we're hearing about the tapes from I Alone Can Fix It, but there are going to be more. You know, Jim, during the Trump years when he was in office, I remember James Fallows popularized an idea about lack of accountability, that any other figure, if they were this delusional, would be held accountable. If the CEO of a company was this delusional, the board would hold a meeting about it. If an airline pilot was this delusional, the airline would bench the person. If an engineer was this delusional, they'd be pulled off the job. What's interesting is, of course, when he was in the White House, there was nobody to step in other than perhaps for the impeachment process. Now we're in this situation where this is a de facto leader of a political party who is this delusional, and we all can see it because we hear the tapes, we all know it, but there's no function of accountability. It's not as if the RNC is holding an emergency meeting to figure out what to do about the mental health of its de facto leader.
No, instead, and as a matter of fact, that's right. And as a matter of fact, there are leaders of the Republican Party who are going up to Bedminster or down to Mar-a-Lago and visit with him, and they embolden that behavior. They make that behavior worse because they will continue to kiss up to him. Let me ask you this. So many Republicans are trying to whitewash former President Trump's role from January 6th. But then you have Trump saying about the insurrectionists, quote, what I wanted is what they wanted. I mean, that's pretty close to, you know, just putting it out there, isn't it?
He's making remarks that if this was in a different setting, if this was in a courtroom setting, if this was in a legal context, you would think he would be doing more damage to his case. Now, will we ever be at that point with regards to January 6th? Perhaps not. Perhaps he's free to tell whatever truths or lies he wants, and there will be no accountability. But, you know, if this was a situation where there was a lawyer involved, they would be cautioning their client not to be making those confessions. By the way, I think these tapes remind us how little we still know about the president's behavior that day.
That's right.
We're hearing from Carol Leonig and Philip Rucker about him enjoying watching this on television, thinking it was cool. But there's still a lot we don't know about those key hours during the attack.
And that is why having a bipartisan commission or at least a committee investigate all of this is so critical to getting at the truth. How else are we going to get at the truth if we don't investigate what happened, including the former president's role? Brian Stelter, thanks so much. And be sure to tune into Brian's program, Reliable Sources. It airs every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. Don't miss it. And just ahead, officials for the Summer Olympics say tomorrow's opening ceremonies will take place as planned. But will the games turn into a super spreader event? We're live from Tokyo next. It's already Friday morning in Tokyo, the long-awaited day of the opening ceremonies for the Olympic Games. Some competitions already are underway, and as feared, we're not only asking who won, but also who's sick with COVID-19. Let's go to Tokyo and CNN's Will Ripley, who is live there. What's the latest, Will?
Well, the First Lady Jill Biden has had a busy schedule since she has arrived. She is a very visible show of support for this Games, which continues to be under fire from many health experts as the number of COVID infections continues to rise.
As the opening ceremony clock ticks down, COVID cases are ticking up. In Tokyo, a new six-month high, close to 2,000 cases on Thursday. The number also climbing among Olympic hopefuls. At least five Team USA athletes are out. At least 16 from other nations. Almost 100 total positive cases connected to the Olympics. COVID-related cutbacks at the opening ceremony, now just hours away. Far fewer athletes in the Parade of Nations and a new scandal. The show's director, Kentaro Kobayashi, the fourth Olympics official, fired or forced to resign. Japanese media uncovering past anti-Semitic statements about the Holocaust. Tokyo 2020's president offering a rare public apology.
I would like to express my deepest apologies for the inconvenience and concern this situation has caused to the many people involved, to the citizens of Tokyo and the public.
With problems piling up, an injection of varied public support from U.S. First Lady Jill Biden. Dr. Biden arriving in Tokyo, her first solo trip abroad as First Lady. Japanese Emperor Naruhito meeting with IOC President Thomas Bach, recognizing the enormous challenge of holding the games during a global pandemic.
The managing of the games, while at the same time taking all possible measures against COVID-19, is a far from easy task.
Bach seemingly backtracking on whether political activism is allowed at the games. Several women's soccer teams taking a knee prior to their matches, including Team USA.
It is allowed. It's no violation of the Rule 50. This is expressively what has been mentioned in these guidelines.
The 32nd Summer Olympiad, shaping up to be like none other. The UN Secretary General putting a positive spin on a games some fear could spin out of control.
We are all in mourning for those lost to the COVID-19 pandemic. Every athlete in Tokyo has overcome enormous obstacles and demonstrated great determination. If we bring that same energy to our global challenges, we can achieve anything.
We are now just over 13 hours away from the beginning of the opening ceremonies, which are expected to have fewer participants and will last longer because of social distancing during the Parade of Nations. Nonetheless, it should be a spectacle. They've been flying the drones in the air. They've had jets practicing, doing the Olympic rings in the air. And Jim, even though public opinion polls show most Japanese overwhelmingly don't want these games to happen, we saw a long line of people taking selfies at the Olympic rings, voicing their support for these games and hoping that once they get started, case numbers will stabilize and people can just relax and enjoy.
And just enjoy the Olympics. Let's hope it all goes off without too many cases over there. Will Ripley, thanks so much for watching that for us. And China, of course, is where the coronavirus was first detected. And now the Chinese are blocking an international effort to discover more about where it showed up. CNN's Nick Peyton Walsh is monitoring the developments from London. Tell us more.
Jim, China's statement this day that it was no longer going to allow the WHO to continue its investigations into the origins of the coronavirus inside of China is what many expected, but a particularly harsh statement, saying that the plan the WHO had was impossible to be accepted, that it was against science, and that it didn't respect common sense. A red line, frankly, there from China, accused by its critics of lacking transparency from the start, frankly, and slow rolling the investigation. But this is utterly vital, frankly, for humanity to work out where the disease emerged. The WHO's leader has been vocally advocating the need to do greater research into the lab leak theory, the idea it was leaked from a laboratory in Wuhan. But really, the investigators want to get the raw data in China from October, November 2019 to work out exactly when and where the virus got into humans first so we can stop this from happening again. But today's harsh statement, unless we see remarkable diplomacy or a trick of the light in the months ahead, does mean the investigation by the WHO is over in China. Now over to the Biden administration's review in mid-August of its intelligence to work out quite what the United States knows. Jim?
CNN's Nick Peyton Walsh, thanks so much. And coming up, the devastating wildfires in the western United States are spreading smoke and haze all the way across the continent. When will air quality as far as the East Coast finally improve? The wildfires burning mostly in the western U.S. now are making an impact from coast to coast. Let's go to CNN meteorologist Tom Sater. Tom, what are these fires doing to the whole country? It is alarming what's happening.
It really is, and it's early, Jim. And the forecast does not look good. I mean, obviously, we're in summer, but the temperatures have been extreme. And it's all of North America, really. Believe it or not, the smoke that made its way into New York City is affecting the air quality in Iceland right now. Let's take a look. 79 active large fires. We had about 84, 85 earlier in the week. But there are many, many smaller ones. California has seen over 5,200 fires. It's scorched now five times more land this year than last year to this date. However, take a look at this. This is the air quality, the worst air quality in New York City yesterday in 15 years. And we can break it down by looking at where the winds will blow the smoke. This is all the fires you see in the West, but it's Canada too. They've got massive large fires in the British Columbia, in Alberta, in Manitoba. Firefighters from Quebec are flying all the way out to help them. But watch the smoke then make its way to the east. And then a cold front sweeps through, massive rainfall, cleaning the skies in New York City and the surrounding communities. But now that cold front has pushed everything down to the southeastern U.S. in the Tennessee Valley. In fact, you can kind of see that little horseshoe there. That's basically the jet stream. Now, these are air quality points. You want to see green. That's good air quality. Where you see yellow, if you're sensitive, you have respiratory issues, you start to feel it. Where you see areas of orange, that's when they start to give out and put out the alerts. We have it now for Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, down into North Carolina. But now the forecast, watch the smoke move down into Georgia, move into Alabama, and then it hangs out for a while. This smoke is going to just stay where the winds are calm, and you'll notice it more or less with a hazy sky and sunrise and sunsets. But Jim, this is what we do not want. Precipitation does look really heavy for the desert southwest, but temperature-wise, all of North America will see even higher temperatures in the next several days and the weeks to come. That heat dome, which has been moving around, slides now into the Midwest. This is going to be a bad year, and last year was record-breaking.
It sure looks that way. All right, Tom Sater, thank you very much for that. And tonight, the Biden administration is hitting Cuba with new sanctions in the wake of historic anti-government protests there on the island. CNN national security correspondent Kylie Atwood is joining us with details. Kylie, give us an update. What's the latest?
Yeah, so the State Department today, Secretary of State Tony Blinken, said that these sanctions were to go after those who were violently repressing the protesters in Cuba. There are two groups that were named today, specifically the Minister of the Revolutionary Armed Forces, and then also this elite Cuban Special Forces group. Their name is the Buenas Negras. They are a group that has been on the streets in Cuba, essentially a special forces unit that has been trying to shut down these demonstrators and doing so violently. And what Secretary Blinken said today in his statement was the fact that they have used violence to try and shut down these protesters demonstrates that the Cuban regime is fearful of their own people. Now, these new sanctions today show that the Biden administration is publicly defining those who are involved in this repression and in these violent crackdowns. And this will be an area to watch because the Biden administration is carrying out a holistic review of its Cuba policy right now. And there is a lot of pressure from folks on the Hill with regards to where they should go with this policy review and if they should engage with Cuba in the way that the Obama administration did or if they should maintain a tougher stance like the Trump administration did.
All right. We'll see if these sanctions have any effect. The Cuban people deserve better than this. Kylie Atwood, thank you very much for that. And coming up, the White House is weighing new COVID measures as the pandemic rages among the unvaccinated. The unvaccinated. Will the CDC update its masking guidance once again?
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.